welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who was hired, fired, and rehired by Umbrella when he dared question the Red Queen's laser grid building in their underwater facility in Kamchatka, Russia. It's John Levengood.
Kamchatka, Russia. It sounds like that horrible 80s movie where the gymnast learns martial arts and fights like Central Asian bad guys.
Yeah, Gymkata. So this could be what camp? I wish I would have spelled it with C-I-M. It could have been like camera. Like you just use cameras to hit people.
Or it sounds like a creamy alcoholic beverage.
Oh yeah, it does.
Like rum chata. That's a drink, right?
Let me get a Kamchatka.
A Kamchatka.
Please.
Kamchatka.
Making him a double. But John, you know, you got fired the first time from the Tokyo base, correct?
Yeah. Something got lost in translation there.
It's a great movie. But you weren't watching Radar because you went to get coffee and then you got fired. So how?
I always drink coffee while I watch Radar.
So how did you get fired? How did you get hired again by Umbrella and get sent to Russia to work in an underwater facility where that led you to question the Red Queen's building of laser grids?
I think it honestly came down to body size. They just knew that I could double as a barricade and clog a door shut if all of your average sized, you know, Tokyo residents were there, and then you have me at damn near 300 pounds.
So
I think God.
So in Russia, if someone attacks the base and you get shot, you're just gonna fall into the stairwell and clog it.
I mean, I think that they just view me as a utilitarian means, or like in Frankenstein's army, you know, like I'm a big guy. They might have viewed me as the next person they'd pump full of growth hormone and the Las Plagas virus, and then hammer some nails into my head and give me a big axe.
Oh, so that's how they get the executioners.
You got to start out with a moderately large person,
so,
right?
You know, in Resident Evil Retribution, there's a scene where Alice comes out and this laser grid starts chasing her, but it chases her and she runs out the exit. The laser grid should have started at the entrance and gone towards the dead end in the back.
I don't know why it didn't seal that hallway shut like it did in the first Resident Evil movie, which made more sense.
So you're one of the staffers there. You're not a clone, which is interesting. You're not a clone. You got rehired. You know, you went through the whole thing again. You got shipped there that you probably have an apartment. And you see this laser grid built terribly. And how do you approach the Red Queen and say, hey, that was a horribly planned laser grid?
I feel like the Red Queen is that HR person that makes everyone else nervous, combined with the boss that makes everyone else nervous. Okay. Combined with the IT person who no one likes because they know that only they know what you need to know to fix the computer. Like, the Red Queen is the sum of everything that you would hate in a workplace.
I think it's brave that you took a stand against her for horribly designed laser grids.
I did. I even tried to punch her, but it just went through the hologram, and then she kept summoning lasers.
Yeah. So you get fired. I'm surprised they didn't vaporize you, and you got out of that place before it blew up. So
I got lucky.
You got lucky.
I got lucky. You know what it is? I was filled with this special kind of rage because I thought that one of those giants with the axe was also about to dip it into a big fish.
Oh, gosh. That'd be a whale.
What if they had like a 600-pound tuna that they dipped their axe into so that Chris Evans could go tackle him?
All right, so that guy was about 6 foot, right? And the fish was about 2 feet long?
Okay. Sure.
So these creatures, how tall do you think these creatures are? About 12 feet?
Like, they're big, yeah. They're big.
A nice 4-foot-long grouper?
Yeah.
Just, you know, like you said, a tuna? I mean, he's just dunking a giant axe into a large tuna. Snowpiercer.
Small shark? A medium shark?
Yeah, I mean, whatever's close. I mean, what is in Russia? Seals?
Sure. Some seals.
So executioners are dunking their axes, and these are all from past episodes, guys. This is one in-joke on top of another in-joke. So
we're in-joking from, like, episode 4, Planes, Trains, and Chris Evans, if that was number 4.
We're building episode 1.
It was in 1?
Yeah.
That we talked about?
We're building. We're really going for it here. But, so they try to escort you out, but they dunk their axes in tunas, and you escape, and you live. I mean, you're stuck in the tundra of Russia, but, I mean, you're not dead.
Well, the worst part is that I believe that I lived, but what if I actually was a clone, and it was a part of my program clone memory that I survived?
Then you'll go full Westworld.
I mean, how do you know if you're a clone in this Resident Evil world?
Do you put pizza in your wallet?
Sounds like a good means to figure it out.
Whoa. this is the way to tell a clone. Clone yourself. And if the clone is stupid, like in Multiplicity, you know you're a clone.
But what if you were stupid compared to your original, but you think that you're the smart one?
But when Michael Keaton cloned the other two, they were perfectly fine. It's just when the clone cloned a clone.
Yeah. There was a huge missing chromosome.
There was a huge drop-off, too. Right? Even if they were a little bit less intelligent than original Keaton, you know, it was just a minor drop-off. But this was like, this guy was killing dolphins. Speaking of dolphins.
It's like when you're mildly hungover, but not enough that someone can tell by looking at you, but you're just operating just a little slow. Like, it takes you a while to remember where you left your keys.
The synapses aren't quite sparking yet.
Right.
But so if you think you're a clone, you just clone yourself. That's how you tell.
So it's the Michael Keane Multiplicity hypothesis.
Yep. If you put a pizza in a wallet, you're a clone of a clone. If you create a clone that puts its pizza in a wallet, you're a clone. If you create a clone that's perfectly smart, but then makes a move of making another clone that puts pizza in its wallet, you're normal.
It works. Sounds like a good scientific postulate there.
I mean, people are stealing this idea right now. There are people writing feverishly.
Just scrambling for their notes on this like notepad that says script idea.
Yeah. We solved it. You're welcome.
Like first it says dogs crossed out. Then it says zombie dogs crossed out. Resident Evil already did it 4 times.
Yeah. Wait, they didn't do it. I'm surprised they didn't do dogs in this one.
Right. Only 4 times they did zombie dogs.
They had liquor. They had liquors.
They did bring the liquors back. Yeah.
They brought the barfers back, which is a callback.
This is
to Resident
the third
Evil.
Movie with liquors.
And the third movie with laser grids.
And the third movie with laser grids, yeah.
Wow.
And the third movie with Wesker?
Yep.
Or the fourth movie with Wesker?
Third movie, because he was in 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
Right. And then we've had, Dr. Ian Glenn was only in 2 of them. Jill Valentine, this is her second. Rain, second. It's our third one with Oded Fehr, who is Carlos.
It's the second one with the guy who was like, what was he? He was like the head SWAT guy in the first movie.
Oh yeah, Colin Salmon.
Yeah, he's back. It's interesting, like the yo-yoing of characters that we see in these movies.
Yeah, I love it. When I heard they're all coming back, I was very happy. I loved it. I'm telling you, right? Resident Evil Retribution is my favorite Resident Evil movie.
But so
it has
far.
We'll talk about it later. But I think it has the most pointless ending, but I still like what happened at the ending. But it's utterly pointless. But it's still kind of cool.
Yeah, this was kind of like the we're running out of ideas garbage fire, but they made the best of it.
They had a $65 million budget. This is the biggest of the series. It made $240 million worldwide. And I think some of the visuals are really striking. Hey, before we get into it, we got questions, right? Listener questions?
We do have listener questions. So Johnny Numb is writing in. Johnny Numb from the Last Knock podcast and the Loud Green Bird movie review site. And Johnny says, I know I've been slacking with listener questions as of late, so to compensate, I have 2 for your later Resident Evil shows. But before I get to them, I was just listening to your episode on the first film, which was our episode 139, and found it interesting that you and Mark didn't think Jennifer Garner would be able to fit in Alice's badass shoes. You might have recorded that show before this movie started being heavily promoted. She looks rather capable of kicking ass in the trailers for Peppermint. If you've seen the trailers, has this affected your perceptions at all? I'm genuinely curious.
I don't think we ever had it. I never had it in doubt that she could carry the physicality of this. When I was writing that Daredevil post about her killing sandbags and loading them up and building a custom truss system on her thing with, things that lifted the sandbags on a remote timer, just watching behind the scenes on her training, like an Alias and this. And I mean, it's never in doubt, Elektra, that she could carry the physicality. I just don't see her as like, maybe she could have done a more upbeat Alice, but the Alice that I see is just owned by Mila. So I just can't see her carrying off this, I don't see her as Alice. She could easily do the physicality. That's fine. That's never in question. But I don't know. Do you see her pulling off Alice?
So I was summoning all the exact same feelings there. It's like, yes, physicality, absolutely. In fact, physicality, she'd be quite superior. She's more physically capable of doing her own stunts. She's in more muscular and more combat ready shape, or at least she used to be. Especially when she was doing Alias, right? And Elektra and Daredevil. And I don't know, if she worked out a lot for that, but she's always just been in great, you know, physical, tough, combat, weightlifty shape. But that aside, yeah, it's like, for me, to find her credible in the role of Alice, not just the badass ass kicking shoes, that I only find Jennifer Garner credible as the tough badass, like the tough mentality in the, through the filter of revenge.
Oh yeah, like her family gets wiped out, right? And then she wants to go after him.
So like here in part five, there's a bit where we see Alice's, one of Alice's clones' daughters, who she readily takes a maternal role to. Well, if the whole franchise had kind of been predicated on something like that, and that was her incentive, her motivation to go against Umbrella, okay, I guess I could see that better, like rescuing her true daughter, the model for the clones. I don't know. But yeah, like just like that kind of gritty, that kind of dark, I'm doing the narrations about the end of the world. Like I don't see Jennifer Garner really doing that. And it, don't get me wrong, Mila did it. So we got to see her do it and I liked her in it. Right. Whereas Jennifer Garner, outside of the few roles that we mentioned where she's tough, of course, you know, I don't know, 100 episodes of Alias, but that aside, like I think of her as these Hallmark, these very saccharine roles, these very cute roles. A lot of times
I think 13 going on 30 kind of set her in that direction because she was so good in it. And then
she was great in that.
Yeah. So, and I think I need to check the dates, but that was kind of after maybe Elektra didn't do so well. Then she hit that. And then, you know, you just kind of ride the wave that you're on of doing it.
She was in that movie like 2 years ago when they, you know, they basically like prayed for her daughter to heal. And then she had this, you know, miraculous recovery. I thought I was watching a trailer for a movie that was going to be on the Hallmark Channel.
But to be fair, when I saw Peppermint was coming out, I was like, about time. Like, she should have been doing this a long time ago.
Oh,
like,
and I'm excited. Let's be clear, Johnny Numb, if you're listening. I am very excited about Peppermint. I love watching Jennifer Garner kick ass. I think that she's awesome.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, but again, it's like there's being great at kicking ass. And then there's being gritty.
If we read the synopsis for Resident Evil, a woman wakes up with amnesia and she wakes up and has to go into the lair where she establishes her powers and kicks a lot of butt. If I read that synopsis, I'd be like, and heard Jennifer Garner was cast, I'd be like, yeah, I see it. I guess just
way back then. Yeah. At the time.
I just see the way the trilogy is. I guess it's really, you know, maybe this is my lack of imagination, but I see it hard to kind of separate Mila from Resident Evil because her and Paul Thomas Anderson are the two that have really built this world and have had the most input. So we would have to like envision another world with Garner playing this role. And I don't know if she'd even want to do six of these kind of movies. Like these are B movies. I love them, but.
Well, you know, and we got to think about some of the things that make it successful, like, because this is going for the video game loving audience, too, not just your random sci horror action movie fans. So, like, I don't know. Does it make a little less money without the scantily clad scenes? You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing out a random curveball here. But Mila has a scantily clad scene in every one of these movies. I'm not seeing it because of that. But those little things help.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for gamers, young kids, they look good on the trailers.
You're going to see the hot chick looking hot for a minute. I don't know.
Mila said that too. I mean, I watched the commentary on this Resident Evil Retribution. There's two of them. And, in the commentary, you know, Mila Jovovich, she's like, she knows what she's doing with these costumes. You know, she talks about the designing of the costumes and all that. And then also Paul W.S. Anderson on a commentary, which I was kind of like, oh, come on, Paul. But he made a joke about Bing Bing Lee in this. She's dressed up as character. I think she's actually really good in this movie.
Ada Wong?
Yeah, Ada Wong. And he's like talking about her. Like he's like shooting her in action in the dress was tough. But he's like, but you know, like audiences are going to like it. And you're like, who's like, ha, ha, ha. So, yeah, I mean, it has to help. It has to add $15 million to the budget.
Well, you know, just thinking about rewatchability, like in horror. In horror, and I know some people who have contacted me about trying to get horror movies started, very minor movies. I'm a nobody, right? But they talk to me about getting it going, and they ask opinions, or they even say it's like, I mean, you know, it's going to do better if we have nudity, even if it's some nobody and it's a shower scene that means nothing. It just it helps these little movies along, even though no one's seeing it just for that, right? And it helps when you have, you know, zombie dogs or some weird spaghetti zombie dogs as opposed to just attack dogs. That's going to help the movie along. And so, but you know, I guess it would be a I'd like to think it would also be a slightly different flavor, Alice, with Jennifer Garner.
You know, you should listen to our Wolf Cop Zombievers covers the podcast because they do all that stuff. They have Wolf Cops, they have Zombievers, they have tons of crazy stuff. It's pretty much horror tropes incarnate that work.
And Kung Fury.
Oh yeah, and Kung Fury.
That was our B movie episode. That was like 15, 16, or 17. That was years ago, folks.
Yeah, that was a long. There's like Wolf Cop 2 I want to watch. I don't know why I haven't done it yet.
I bought it. I just haven't had time.
Got it.
Yeah.
Next question.
So next question, also from Johnny Numb. Question number 2. From best to worst, how would you rank Mila's outfits in the Resident Evil films? This can be in terms of efficiency, style, or any other ways you can find to rationalize this fashion.
I mean, I think we've done a pretty good job breaking all four of these outfits down, but the number one to me is the Amelia Alice Hart from Resident Evil Afterlife. Because she just was like a pilot outfit while she's flying a plane. And it seemed practical. I don't know. It just seemed – that's my number one right there. It's the Amelia Earhart because that's what they called that outfit.
I've kind of been liking her tactical, very Kate Beckinsale underworld outfits, but even more tactical looking, you know, like this one, the leather and the buckles, her ninja suit, the suit that had like that semi-metal, I don't know, like girdle torso piece in part 4.
Wait, is Kate Beckinsale's outfits an underworld tactical?
No, but it's just the leather, and now she's adding the tactical. They're more tactical than Beckinsale's.
Okay, I thought you were saying they're tactical, and I was like, what?
More tactical than Beckinsale's. So it's like, you know, but getting that leather chicness without simply being a tight leather outfit for the sake of a tight leather outfit. And I kind of like them. They're fun, but I do really love part 3 when she's wearing that kind of like
Mad Max.
Yeah. It's like she did the best that she could with limited resources.
And she designed all these, except for probably the paper. So here, I'll give it a ranking. Amelia Earhart from Resident Evil Afterlife, the red dress from Resident Evil with the shorts, because they're probably the most iconic look. The ninja from Afterlife, the Mad Max from Extinction, her crazy get up in Retribution, domestic Alex, Alice from Retribution with her flannel shirt. And then the paper things. I mean, that's just gratuitous. It's like, how? And then the one from the second one, the one-legged pants with cut-up mesh thing and the orange top. Like, she took her time to grab scissors during the apocalypse and, like, scissor up or cut up her little – or not – cut up her outfit. So in my head, I just want to picture a montage of her making it. Like, you know when Bruce Campbell makes his chainsaw hand in Evil Dead 2? I want to see her cutting that mesh top up.
Like in a montage.
Yeah, like a montage.
Like she stops in a department store.
Yeah.
Finds all the things.
And then cuts it up and like just with Resident Evil, like new metal playing over it, which there's a lot of in the Resident Evil movies. And it's just her snipping up her top.
So I you know, it's funny that you even joked about like the little scantily clad things. They didn't cross my mind. And neither did, but I, the alternative, like the clone Alice in the flannel, I'd even think of that. That was that very Dawn of the Dead 2004 scene.
That was straight up. Oh yeah, we'll get into it. That was Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah. But yeah, for me, it's 5-3-4-2-1. It's this leather buckles. It's desert apocalypse. It's Jova clone ninjas followed by just that kind of like rugged, hardly tactical outfit from part 2. I wasn't a fan of the red dress. I never played the games though.
I guess if you just show if you think about the character in there, you do one picture of her, that's probably what pops up. I'm guessing, but I feel like that's what pops up in most people's minds.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm definitely going with the Amelia Earhart. All right, you want to get into the movie here?
All right, yeah.
All right, so we start off with where the fourth movie left up on that massive boat. An umbrella comes, and they just murder everybody on the boat, which doesn't make sense to me. They kill most of the people on there, slaughter them. They don't have weapons. And then they, I mean, it's beautiful. It's told what in, I mean, it's shot in reverse. So it kind of goes.
Reverse slow-mo. I thought this was the best use of slow-mo in the franchise so far.
Oh, yeah. No, it looked beautiful the way they shot it. I mean, they shot it actually in a garbage truck car park in Toronto, which I kind of love. And they had 50 feet of ship. And oh no, I thought it looked great. I liked the music. I thought, you know, Alice coming, falling into the water, opening up with that, then everything. Like, it was a very inventive shot. And a lot of people say that these Resident Evil movies offer more of the same. But with this shot, I mean, Anderson proves that he's not doing that. This is a very unique take. It's interesting. It looks really good.
So that's interesting. You mentioned that some people describe these movies as more of the same, and I never actually felt that. Did you feel that any two of these movies back to back were more of the same?
No, but you know what I think with these critics who are saying this is they kind of watched them like I initially did, where you watch one in the theater, then you watch the next one in the theater, then you watch the next one in the theater,
right.
And they probably all blend together. Now, I'll tell you, when I saw the fourth one, I was like, this is different. And when I saw the fifth one, I went, whoa. Between 1, 2, and 3, I maybe felt like they blended together. But when you look back at them, all three are completely different. You have the mainly indoors Resident Evil. You have the nighttime Resident Evil Apocalypse. You have the daytime Resident Evil Extinction. Then you have the very gray, muted, you know, they all pretty much stay in one location. But then the fourth one goes from, I mean, it goes from what, Tokyo to Alaska to LA to a boat. And then this one
yeah,
is an,
under, cool, yeah.
an underground facility. I mean, you're in Tokyo, you're in Berlin, and you're in New York. But no, I mean, these are definitely not the same. And it was pretty interesting reading the reviews on this one. People hate this movie. They're like, oh, where's the pause button? This is more of the same. This is crap. But one guy from AV Club, who I love, wrote a great piece about this. It's called Run the Series, and it's about Resident Evil. And he did a very good job talking about how they really do follow each other. You know, these movies follow each other closely. They're have, you know, simple. This movie has a simple storyline. I mean, it's convoluted, but it's just like, get out of this place. A team's coming in to get you out. Simple things. A lot of the shots he talked about, he really took 3D further. I mean, this, I don't know, we've talked about this a lot, but it was pretty interesting reading all the reviews on this. And I just felt like a lot of people weren't giving it a chance because, I mean, you know, that movie The Meg had 2.5 times the budget this movie did. And I feel like this movie was a little bit more creative with what it did in
oh,
some
yeah.
of the scenes. And, I mean, just what Paul W. Sanderson can do with $60 million, that's a testament to him. And I thought after watching all these movies, it's like watching someone grow up, kind of, in regards to maturity of their filmmaking. Because the first Resident Evil's good, didn't have much of a budget, but it's a little dorky. You know, it kind of does that. The second one, you have, you know, different directors coming in, but then the third one really steps up its CGI. The fourth one, Anderson's back, the 3D, the shots, the phantom camera, and now this one with more 3D and a little bit more money and probably the best, like a really great corridor. See, like, he's growing up with these movies. You can almost see him maturing as a filmmaker with these. So I've really enjoyed them watching them back to back.
Yeah, it's a lot more. It's just like I said about it. Well, I guess I've said it a bunch of times now. The Saw series and this series are movies that should be watched in close proximity.
Yeah, because you, I guess if you watch the Saw movies when they were in the theater, you're like, what happened at the last one?
I used to think that none of them made any sense after part 3. I used to think they were so stupid. And then I saw them like all in a few weeks. I'm like, this is really good. Like, it was such a world of difference.
I would be annoyed. Because I thought these Resident Evil movies were just bonkers and didn't really follow each other. Then I watched them. I'm like, well, I can't say that anymore.
So my review on the website for part 4 was that it was my least favorite of the series. But that was when I first saw it, like fresh, right? Like having not seen the others, close to it. And so then I watch it again. I'm like, wow, like this is good. Like, as far as Resident Evil movies go, I don't know how to contextualize that. But like I went from being grumpy about it to being like, this is really fun.
Yeah. And like we said, you just got to watch these movies on another. You just got to watch them in regards to video game movies and how they're at as Resident Evil movies. I mean, these aren't. I mean, Paul W. Anderson is he's unpretentiously making these movies. And you can see in these films, he just sees a scene, he likes it, he's like, hey, let's add it in this movie. I like the birds, so let's add a scene in Resident Evil Extinction. He just wants to throw some cool stuff, make him look neat, have his wife kick butt, and tell a surprisingly coherent storyline. So, I mean, in regards of just pure entertainment, I enjoy him. All right, so we have this gunfight, right? Looks amazing. Then we cut to her in basically suburban life, right? She's married to Oded Fair.
Carlos, yeah.
Yeah, she's married to Carlos. Oh, in this movie, he's Todd. That's his clone. Oh, that's no, we're spoiling everything. It's Todd, Carlos and Todd. And they have a daughter played by, her name is, what is her name? Becky. And you know what I found out was interesting? They cast this girl because they were watching, Paul W. Anderson and Milo were watching that movie Orphan.
Orphan,
when they
yeah.
were on vacation in Mexico. And they liked her, so they hired her. And she's cool. Like, the daughter wasn't in the script that's supposed to be hearing impaired. And this girl, Ariana, in real life is hearing impaired and her mother is deaf. So it's kind of cool that they saw a girl in Orphan. They're like, oh, whatever. We'll just like her. We'll just put her in the movie. So they added that whole subplot. And it's very overly lit. You can tell they're on a stage. I'm like, they're bombing these interiors with light, kind of like a dreamlike state that you know isn't real.
They were in The Truman Show.
Yeah, they were. And that's another movie he said he wanted to copy in this. And so they're in The Truman Show, and then a zombie runs in the house, and then all heck breaks loose, exactly like Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead remake, yeah.
However, Michelle Rodriguez pulls up in a Prius.
Announces that she's an anti-gun activist.
Yeah, which makes me so happy. Just when I first watched this movie and I saw Michelle Rodriguez in a Prius, I'm like, this is amazing.
Instead of Fast and Furious, it was tempered and below the speed limit.
You know, it's funny. Megan and I were walking the other day. We were going to go to the park, and we're walking. There was a Prius behind us. We didn't even know. And then it just kind of like drives past you like, and you're like, that's creepy. So Michelle Rodriguez in a little Prius pulls up. Oded Fair is dead. Mila and her daughter jump into the car. But of course, Michelle Rodriguez doesn't pay attention and she flips the car. And then we cut to Mila in a huge glass room.
Her clutch scantily clad.
Yeah, the sheets are back. The paper sheets that you use on a... Like, you know, sometimes people, you know, when you go to a restaurant and people have that big roll of paper and they rip it off and put it on top of the table. And
right.
Done with
yeah.
it, they cra- like, that's what she's doing. And Jill Valentine, who in the film, in the commentary, I can say this because I think it's pretty funny in the commentary. But so the Jill Valentine shows up and she has that weird cleavage spider thing that Allie Larder had in the fourth one. And she has
dude, that was
control.
Like the Guillermo del Toro Chronos.
Yep. But I love it, though. In the commentary, though, Boris Kojo was like, hey, cleavage spider. And then Mila just started laughing about it. So that's what they called it for the rest of the thing. Jill Valentine's back from the second one. She tortures her. But then the power goes down, John.
Yep. Very convenient when the power goes down.
But you know what I love, though, about this scene is they're like, you have 90 seconds to leave this room. And then the clothes things open up. So she gets into her entire battle outfit in 60 seconds.
Which was waiting for her, just like when Kate Beckinsale woke up in Underworld Awakening out of her cryo thing. And they're like, just in case you wake up, here's your stuff.
Yeah, I can't even put my socks on in 15 seconds. So Mila had to get this thing on. And that's when the laser grid turns on. It chases her to the entrance and she gets out. You want to hear something interesting about this cool glass set?
It was cool. Yeah, that blaring white hallway.
You want to hear something neat?
Sure. Okay.
All right, yeah. So okay. This set needed 14 generators to run. So on normal film sets, or you know, one commercial can run on an entire Jenny. So you have like a grip truck, and a big. All right, so, this is foreign language, but so you have a truck, you're trailing a generator behind it, like one of the big portable generators that runs on gas. You can plug all your stuff into it. It prevents light from flickering. It's really kind of nice. So they needed 14 massive generators. Which on a film set, you probably have one or two. So 14 generators ran the power to these glass rooms, which is crazy. I mean, like, that's what I like about Paul W. Anderson. The fourth one, he builds that all white ship where they had to paint it every time someone walked on it.
And I this love one, that ship.
Yeah. And this time they build like a massive glass, beautifully lit room and corridor that took 14 generators to power it. And they made a joke about, they're like, yeah, the skyscrapers in Toronto had to stop building because we used up all the glass. Which I thought was pretty funny because the companies were doing that for him. But it's kind of neat, though. He had a vision and they built a really cool set. And I think it leads to the best fight scene of the series so far. What do you think about the corridor fight scene in Tokyo?
Oh, I love it. I love that fight. The stark white makes it seem all the more crisp. It gives it, I don't know, it's not a surreal feel, but it looks gorgeous. And by the way, the stunt choreography, stunt execution, and action editing were all vastly superior in this movie to all the others, in my opinion.
Yeah, the stunt coordinator in this one's like, we got to step it up. But in this one, I wrote some notes here. And I was like, Mila looks awesome. And I wrote, awesome knee. And then I wrote again, she looks awesome. Like, this is choreography, though. Now, it's kind of funny. She was joking about how she had a rubber chain. And so in this hallway fight, she has this, like, rubber chain that she's hitting people with. And she's like, there's a scene where she breaks a zombie's arm. She's like, I didn't break his arm for real. It's pretty funny. But they actually held. It wasn't too choppy, I didn't think, the fight scene and the way they ran at her. Well, you know, all right, so you know some fight scenes, it's just... it's the second one, Resident Evil Extinction, with the big thing just swinging, you know, looking like a robot going back and forth, and they just cut, like,
punch, cut.
Like, you know, Bourne Identity style cutting, how fast that is. This one, I feel like they let the camera linger, and they actually let the stunts play out. And I love that. I really felt like they went out of their way to create a really neat set piece. I wonder if you watched Old Boy before this. But I thought just the fighting, the way she used that, the way she took out those zombies, I just thought it was great.
Best action, period. Yeah, best action of the franchise for me. I guess it's the best budget, and we're on the fifth movie now.
Yeah,
and I shouldn't be surprised.
They have more time too, because you have more money, and then they have that really cool room, so it just looked great. And yeah, the stunt coordinator sat Paul down, was like, we got to do this. We got to make this look awesome. I feel like hallway fights, when they're done right, are unbelievable. I know you and I had talked before. You brought up Punisher and Daredevil and Old Boy, Protector. I mean, I guess we thought more about it, there'd be some even better hallway fights. I mean, I like stairwell fights, too. There have been some good, like Casino Royale, Captain America Civil War. I'm just going to make a fight. I mean, that's basically what the raid is. Maybe that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of proximity fights. They treated it like it was close proximity, even though the set itself wasn't. But the Batman Begins, when they were talking about the KC fighting style that Christian Bale was using.
Oh, yeah.
When he was in the parking garage fight, where you see him first really using that. Like, there's something really great about those fights, where it's not just, you know, Van Damme doing jump spin, you know, split kicks all over the place like he has 18 rooms of space.
Yeah, if he did that in a hallway, his feet would get stuck. He'd be in a split with his feet in the sides of the wall.
He would break his ankle against the wall, and then the bad guy would just kick him while he was on the ground.
If I was a villain, I wouldn't want to fight Jason Bourne in a hallway, but I'd fight a Jean-Claude Van Damme character in a hallway.
Van Damme, his characters could not fight in a hallway. They would always lose.
You know who would be good in a hallway fight? Dolph Lundgren with his front kicks.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the good punches. You know, he has the boxing skills, and he also has the long range. He'd just be front kicking people into oblivion.
Yep. You know who wouldn't? Rocky. Because when he starts winning, he's throwing wild haymakers like Henry Cavill throwing bombs in the new in Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah, his hands would be broken in no time. He would shatter his arms on the first punch. We should put together the ultimate hallway fighter people. I remember Brian from Fast and the Furious. He was good in hallways because he used the walls to jump off of. I don't know how practical they are, but they work in the movie.
And then he was fighting. He fought Tony Jaa.
Oh yeah, in a tight space.
Yeah, that was really cool. They were falling down stairs and stuff. Like, that was cool.
And I love when he said too slow. Remember he got him back from earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
So this whole really cool sequence came from what we learned was. The Tokyo sequence, right?
Yeah, the Tokyo sequence with the replay from 4, right? From the beginning.
I think that's right.
4, yeah, the beginning of 4, where the outbreak breaks out in Tokyo. So they're just sort of recreating this zombie outbreak in Tokyo, and Alice just happens to go there, and she's chased into the hallway, where she unleashes a sweet knee.
It's funny, that knee. A lot of she had a lot of good maneuvers. That's something, you know, it's like this movie, she had just in that scene, but this movie had a lot of like crisp, memorable action moments.
Yeah. And you know who I was very, I guess we're moving into it next, but we meet, Ada Wong. I was really impressed with Bing Bing Lee's action, the way she shot. She just remained really calm. Like when she shot her gun, she never blinked.
Right.
They were pointing out in the commentary, stayed super chill, pulled off like the running. I liked her and Alice actually working together. And it's also kind of crazy that Ada Wong walked into a underground facility, murdered every single, which would have been your job, killed all the people working in this big, massively lit room, and then dumped exposition onto Alice.
You mentioned the lighting a lot of times, and I actually took a note of this too, because you mentioned the almost artificially bright lighting of the suburban simulation with a plaid shirt homemaker Alice, right?
Yeah.
And then like there's this hallway. There was even the opening battle sequence with all the crisp fire. This like the lighting in this was normally the word stark, I think, is used in a negative note with lighting, but it was positively stark.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, no. I really liked, it was just the right blare that it made it effective. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I don't know any of the technical words for this. I'm just pretending that I know movie things like Mark does. I don't know these terms.
This is definitely the best lit. And I think that is, Glenn McPherson is back. He's the director of photography, and he had worked with another movie with Paul. I think he probably worked on Three Musketeers in between this with Paul. So this was probably their third movie together. So you can tell that there's a shorthand between them, and they're actually really on the same page with each other.
So this Ada Wong, by the way, I don't know her from – well, all I really know off the top of my head that she was also in was The Meg, and she's obviously not doing a lot of action, you know, like that is, you know, physicality-based stuff in The Meg. Like, was this her only – action role?
Oh no, she has some here, let me pull up she has some very large roles in China. She was
okay.
In the Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie Chan.
Oh really?
Yeah, she was in I'm pulling it up right now, but yeah, she is, you know, no, she has
okay, so she has a past of action movies.
Yeah, and you could tell from this. Yeah, no, I liked her a lot more in this than I did in The Meg. I thought she was like a pretty cool action hero in this.
Well, The Meg is its own.
Yeah.
Folks should just wind it back a few episodes if you want to hear Mark and Robert talking about The Lamb. I'm talking about the Meg. Robert Lamb and Mark talking about The Meg.
she's super she seems super chill in this. Bing Bing. She just seemed very relaxed with the action scene, like seemed calm. You don't see that much. And it wasn't like a bland calm. I was like, man, she's pretty badass. Like, she actually pulled off one of Wesker's agents. And Wesker's back. John, how do you feel about that?
Right. Not evil Wesker, but still kind of evil Wesker, or the lesser of two evil Weskers. Because he was what basically got Alice out of her little torture chamber with Jill Valentine. And, you know, he's so smug. He's always smug in these movies, but, oh, hello, Alice. I'm the one who let you out. And now you have to work for me, and you really don't have a choice. Like, he's very CEO douchebag slick here.
They called him the Derek Zoolander of evil, just the way he talks. I got the black lung pop.
Yeah, pretty much. And he gives us this little exposition dump too about, you know, like we're in an arms race against the evil, and you're our only hope, and I'm your only hope, and whatever. It's fine. It gave us a nice little spin. If there is a cheap aspect to this movie for me, it's the Wesker factor. Yeah.
And there's that scene where he's like, they sold biological weapons to America. America bought it. They sell biological Russians weapons to Russia. They bought it. They sell biological Russians to China. They bought it. Then he says one other thing. Then Alice goes, they bought it. Like, it's like,
yeah,
he didn't need did all that. So they're in this underwater laboratory. They're testing viral weapons in the facility. This is where it all started. So everyone had to have viral weapons, but it turned out to be biological and not nuclear. It's Umbrella's greatest creation, the belly of a beast. It's in the Straits of Kamchatka, northern Russia. And they built the testing floor based off old submarine docks that the Russians built during the Cold War that Paul W.S. Anderson was obsessed with.
And to get you out, Alice, we're sending a team.
A strike team coming to help you. Now, for some reason, Umbrella and all their cameras and satellites have no idea that this vehicle is approaching.
Yeah, it's like, Alice, for all your skill, and Ada Wong, for all their, or not Ada, is Ada Wong the character's name? It's a character name.
Yeah, Ada Wong.
So Alice and Ada, for all of their outlandish skill, like, you could never possibly get out. That's why we're sending a strike team. And the strike team, don't get me wrong, they're good with their guns. They're basically a less futuristic gang of colonial marines, though. They're basically just, you know, like high-paid merc soldiers.
Freelancers.
And when they come in, they don't seem like they're some super-duper trained. They just have earpieces and expensive guns and, you know, some good tactics.
Sync your watches. We have So they show up, they sync their watches for 2 hours to set a bomb. And if they don't get out, the entire facility is going to be flooded, which is cool. And
sure, you got to give it a little urgency.
Now, to be fair, I was happy that Luther was back because I like Boris Kojo. I was really happy to see Kevin Durand.
Oh, I love Kevin Durand and everything.
And he's Barry in this. But I'll tell you, that dude Leon, played by Yoann Herb, I did not care. I kept forgetting the guy's name. I kept forgetting he was there. I'm like, why is this guy in the movie? So the strike team shows up. It's a bunch of tall people, which actually made Oded Fehr angry on set because he's used to being the tall guy. And the guys on this set made him look short.
He probably loved working with Rob Schneider and Deuce Bigelow.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, on film sets, you're not used to having a bunch of 6'3" people on there.
Yeah, and Durand is like 4 or 5, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's gigantic. And he's wide as anything.
Yeah, that dude's a tank. You know what's funny? On Glow... Not the lead actress Alison Brie, the one who's the Captain America character.
Right.
She's like, I guess she was actually on that show for a long time, and she's 5'7". And she's like, I was so happy to get out of Hollywood. Like, well, I wasn't tall anymore. She said she was a giant on set, and she's 5'7". So you have a bunch of 6'3" dudes, and old Ed Fair was getting annoyed. But yeah, so moving forward, they have
Well, this is where we're introduced to the Red Queen.
Yeah, the Red Queen. Now, all right, I gotta ask you something, John. The Red Queen isn't a remember she calls the Red Queen a homicidal bitch? The Red Queen was just doing her job in the first movie.
Yeah.
It's not her fault that Umbrella planned horribly and placed vents that went outside and had a train that went underneath and had glass tubes that were easily shatterable that allows the T-virus to go out into vents.
That was the most fragile virus container.
It's like a candy glass that you have dogs jump through. It just shatters. So the Red Queen is basically like, listen, it's either the world or the people working in here who are already infected because the vents are horrible. And then when Michelle Rodriguez was infected, she's like, listen, I can let you guys leave because you're not infected, but I can't let her get out because she could spread it. And they're like, no, you're evil. And the whole time, you know, maybe I put 4 billion people over the lives of one infected person already. But I was like, this Red Queen's making sense to me.
I really hope that listeners aren't yelling at us, calling us like the AI villain sympathizers. Like, because I agree, the Red Queen wasn't really being a villain. They made her talk in a slightly villainous way sometimes. But that was just, you know, that's just movie flair.
But yeah,
the thing was doing its job. I agree. It was doing it fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, the people who went in on Resident Evil, they thought that the Red Queen was the one who did it all, but it was actually Purefoy. So they're going to shut down the Red Queen, and she's like, I'm going to laser grid you. I'm not the one who did anything wrong. And then everybody in there was infected already. When she sealed everything off, everybody was infected. So she was just being smart and didn't want billions of people to die. And now she's evil?
She's just doing her thing.
But that's like a big character arc right there. Just took over. How did that move? So you were working there. How did you take over? Oh, no, you were fired And then she took over, then you were rehired.
I guess Skynet became self-aware.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good thing. She didn't, yeah, so, I mean, that's probably why you were rehired, because she came back.
Right, they're like, we need the bodies.
No, why didn't she just run it by herself and have laser grids everywhere?
She was at the mercy of the laser grids that were put in there before her AI became self-aware.
Oh, got it. So they had already built the place, and then she took over it. Then
she could have pulled a 1999 virus scenario, the movie Virus with Jamie Lee Curtis, where it starts making cursory robots that are used to make bigger robots that are used to fight humans. That virus is a hell of a fun movie.
Couldn't she have turned all the clones into just wake all the clones to stop that task force?
I guess I don't know the programming ability she has. Like, what if all the programming of the clones, though, is done in the genetic preparation? It's a developing clone, maybe she can't do anything. I don't know.
And if you wake them too early, they're going to put pizza in their wallets.
They're going to put pizza in the wallets. So many listeners are like, what are they talking about?
Look at Multiplicity Pizza Wallet. You'll know what I'm talking about. Clones.
Well, so eventually they're going to get out after some self-sacrifice, which unfortunately, you know, like, wasn't that awesome in my opinion from our strike team. And
I don't even know the strike team's names. I know Luther and I know Kevin Durant because he's cool.
Right.
I don't even know who Blondie is.
Those other two dudes. Yeah, that dude who is like a poor man's Jamie Lannister.
He's been in a ton of stuff, and maybe he is a good actor, but his dialogue was not good in this movie. Actually, I just want to say one thing before we go to break. I know I'm jumping ahead, but I just have to do this. There's this scene between him and Alice where she wants to go back for her daughter because her daughter was taken from her.
Wait, who's him? You mean poor man's Jamie Lannister?
Yeah, Blondie. Okay. And he goes up to her and he goes, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "She's alive. I'm going to go get her. I didn't lose this many friends for you to walk away. I plan on coming back. Don't do this. You're more important than she is. That's where you're wrong. This is a mistake. Get out of my way." And they kept going to these over-the-shoulder shots on two of them. Like, what's happening here?
They were having a tough guy contest.
All right. So how about this? Let's take a break. Let's rewrite that scene. And when we come back, you and I will deliver a better scene.
Oh, dear.
All right. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. All right, John, here's the scene. Let's do it. All right.
Oh, dear. Oh, wait, am I? Am I poor man Jamie Lannister Blondie?
Yep, you're poor Blondie Lannister. And okay. I am going to be Alice.
Okay.
All right. So you're just kind of asking me what I'm doing.
Hey, Alice, what are you doing?
My kid was taken from me from a large barfer. I need to go rescue him because I'm a human, not a clone.
I'm pretty sure that isn't actually your kid.
Yeah, but since we've been together, I've bonded with it. And, you let one clone die, we become the Red Queen. Am I the Red Queen?
Alice, speaking of your bonding, how did you suddenly know sign language?
That's a good question. I'm not quite sure of that either. You know what? Let's wake up some of my clones and let's ask them. Wait, am I a clone?
Am I a clone?
All right, how about this? Let's go to the clone shop. Let's make clones. And if our clones put pizza in wallets, we'll know that we're clones.
Done. except for, because I'm a special SWAT guy, they're going to be MREs. Just takes like one of those Pop-Tarts that tastes like pizza and try to put it in his wallet.
Oh, see, that was a better scene. We learned a lot. You know, I managed to fit pizza in the wallets again.
We revealed that Alice somehow knew sign language just because the girl did.
Yeah,
because
they liked her an orphan.
Apparently. So now I gotta wonder, because Alice is the model and not the clone, and the clone was using sign language, right? Her suburban clone was using sign language to talk to her suburban deaf daughter, right? Well, that's a clone of Alice, and we learned that Alice is one of the 50 original models. So that means that actually Alice knew sign language this whole time, and we just never had a reason to know it.
Oh, now we know, because she knew it.
But why?
I mean, maybe, well, when she did security, right? All right, so she did security.
Oh, like instead of Navy SEAL signals, she was going full-out sentences.
Yeah, because, like, you know when, you know, during the World War II with the Wind Talkers, the famous Nicolas Cage movie, you know, they couldn't break that code. So with this, as opposed to doing the traditional, you know, things, they learned sign language so they could communicate, you know, silently so they could take out their enemies.
Even though they never did it in the movies.
No. Nah, I mean, well, she only had Purifoy. And, you know, so, I mean, then he got barfed. So he got licked. He got, well, I like saying barfed. The liquor barfed him. So she didn't have anybody to do it with. And so now she does.
Well, I mean, now she has it for when she goes through all the different simulations of the different cities.
Can I tell you something? I'm really happy that you, because when you were talking about the 50 original clones with her making clones and then that clone, I was kind of going cross-eyed and then you really summed it up nicely. You almost lost me there. I almost froze. I almost short-circuited there, but you summed it up nicely. You went down a rabbit hole of 50 clones, original clones, this clone, but then the original, since she's the original.
You were like the 1984 Terminator. It just said it was blinking and it said processing dot, dot, dot on your screen. It's like back in the old days when you would in like Doom or one of those old like computer games, if you got too many bad guys on the screen at one time, the computer would just like crash.
Yeah, I was almost there. Oh my goodness. I rallied though. That was good. You pulled it back from the precipice. You almost lost me.
Okay, so sign language Alice.
Yeah.
And it's like Stewardess Barbie, sign language Alice, and poor man's Lannister.
Yeah.
They're gonna go simulation hopping.
Yep. Wait.
And they end up in New York.
Wait, no, because she goes to New York. Actually, I want to talk about something real quick before we do this. There's a scene where the people of the strike team strike in, and they're in northern Russia, and Luther is still wearing a tank top, which I love. And they joked about that. So they go into the
– guy's got great arms. There's no reason not to show them.
Oh, absolutely. And so they go into this hive. But there's a scene I love where they kill these guards, these really weird leather-clad guards. But they walk up, and there's two guards up on this catwalk, and they shoot one guard, right? And this guy goes, "Aah!" And then he falls and just splats on the ground. The guard that's 15 feet from him doesn't even move. So do you think this guard was listening to a podcast or music on the job underneath his helmet? And that's why he didn't hear his buddy get shot and splat on the ground?
He was listening to MFF episode 139 about the first Resident Evil movie.
So, So he's in there. He's laughing. He's chuckling. He's calling us a bunch of knuckleheads. He's telling us that we're wrong about a character. He's like, "Oh, well, no. The tunnel was 15 kilometers wide." You know, he's correcting us. He's in his head. His buddy gets shot. He doesn't even know. I mean, he doesn't move. So he's listening to episode 139, and he gets shot. I mean, that doesn't happen to most of our listeners. We just want to let you know. And
it's probably a great way to go, though, listening to us.
If you are a security guard, you gotta focus on the job.
You know, you gotta listen to episode 40 and learn about what henchmen shouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah, if he would have listened to that, then he
would have... What was that title? It was the best advice for cinematic henchmen or something?
Yeah, don't ride a motorcycle. You know, just vet your employers.
I talk about their health benefits and their lack of firing range time.
You know what I was annoyed about? I don't think I've ever seen a henchman be successful on a motorcycle, but in that movie Mile 22, there was a slightly successful motorcycle henchman.
I will say they're moderately successful in the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah. Do they? I guess moderately successful.
But that's because Indy is a scrapper, though. He's not the guy who's like the best fighter. He's just the guy who happens to win.
Yeah. Don't the motorcycle henchmen in Indiana Jones just ride their motorcycles up and jump on stuff and then they climb up?
Yeah, but they are executing seriously difficult stuff. Like in Last Crusade, when he's being followed with his dad, like they're doing some. I feel like they're doing the stuff that the transporter is normally doing.
Got it. So,
and Indy is just like trying to live.
So Indy is wiping out truly elite motorcycle henchmen in that unbeknownst to him.
Right.
Between him and Han Solo, he wipes out a lot of big name people.
Yeah,
not on purpose. All right. So Ada Wong and Alice go to New York for a
the
very
New York sim. And this is the one time in this movie where I will say there is a little more of the same.
Yeah, I mean, they just fight the executioners. There's two of them.
Their special effects look slightly better. The nails look a little, like, you know, grimier.
Yeah.
I felt. But they still do a lot of the same stuff, like throwing the axe in slow-mo. A great shot. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is the same thing. And I guess,
can't fault it.
Do you think I wonder if it's just Paul W.S. Anderson going, I'm better this time. This time I got better at it. Watch.
I agree that it was much better in this movie than the first movie. It's just the first movie had the luxury of the slow-mo water, though.
Yeah, that was cool. But you know what I did like in this scene when the two executioners run at them? And then they just kind of stay in place, and then the executioners swing down, and then they kind of step aside, and they immediately shoot for the head. Like, they're very tactical against these things.
They shot them in the head so many times, I don't know how it wasn't goo.
Yeah. What are in those sacks?
Apparently, like, a T-800 metal exoskeleton.
Yeah, it must be. Because they have 40 bullet holes in them.
they're tough.
It would be porridge. But then they get their axes stuck in a cop car and they blow them up with teamwork. So, I mean,
it was cute.
Yeah, it looked better. I watched that scene. You're right, though. It's definitely more the same, but I was like, hey, good job, Anderson. It's better.
Then we go to the next level of this video game. We went from Tokyo to New York, and now we're going to Moscow.
Yeah, where these Basclada undead getting a
gun. Las Plagas.
They get into
the baklavas.
The baklavas, you know, the Greek desserts.
And they are coming out. They are basically like, it made me feel like one of those 80s undead Nazi movies, even though it was Russia. Like they're coming out with like machine guns. One of them's driving a Jeep with a minigun attached to it with a dude at a gun turret.
They have rocket launchers.
Dude, like, yeah, I'm watching this. I'm like, I don't know how our strike force is going to survive this. They have bazookas and turret guns.
Yeah, they miss many, many bullets, but then they do kill a guy with a chainsaw.
Right, of all things, a chainsaw. Like, this was like kind of the bonkers moment for me, where it was like, this is bad, but I'm embracing it.
And you know what's funny is
like I love it.
The guy that gets chainsawed, all these guys were clinical. They were wiping out the baklava. You know, great philo. You crush up some nuts, put them on top, put some butter on each layer of philo. You need about 7 layers, and you crush it, put it all down, lay on so another 7 layers of philo.
You're talking about how you actually make baklava right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
The first time I made baklava, I was standing on my island and I was hunched down the whole time. I didn't realize it would take me a very long time to do it because you have to butter and you have to move really fast with the phyllo. And my back was killing me. So, yeah, I hate baklava zombies.
These zombies were killing them.
So they're being clinical. They're wiping them out. And then the guy misses his shot when the chainsaw guy comes at him. And I'm like, oh, brother. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, so then the baklava guys chase them into there, and then they figure out a way to escape. But then that leads to Ada Wong and Alice going into the Truman Show.
Right, the Truman Show sim.
Yeah, they're in the Truman Show, and they find the daughter. But guess who's – you know what I loved? I love seeing Michelle Rodriguez and Oded Fehr and Colin Salmon back. That made me so happy.
Yep, but now we see – Carlos and Rain in the Upside Down, and now they're bad clones.
I love that scene. They're like, well, like, they're like, you can't do this. And then Michelle Rodriguez is like, not my problem. Then Ada
and
just...
she's like, but you this, that, and the other. She's like, I don't even know who you are, lady.
I love that. That was sweet.
It's like, just in case the viewer wasn't paying attention, these are clones. Yeah. Which means Carlos... And Rain, or I'm sorry, Oded and Michelle are each playing two different clones in this movie.
Whoa. So Oded has been 3 characters in this film.
Right.
And wait, and so is Michelle Rodriguez.
3?
Yeah, because she was the NRA, and then she was the anti-NRA, and then she was the tough guy, and then the first one, she's
Oh, you mean in the whole franchise?
Yeah, in the whole franchise.
I gotcha, yeah.
That's funny. But,
Yeah, so this is I told you way back in like movie two, it's like, dude, we're gonna start getting close. You're gonna see characters come back. I'm not gonna tell you how.
I didn't remember any of it. And this only happened in 2014.
I don't know who you are, lady.
I love that line.
I don't even know you, lady.
And then Ada comes out and shoots all the redcoats, the guys that are listening to our podcast. She wipes them all out, and then she shoots a hole in the floor and survives, and then Mila escapes, correct? Alice escapes?
Right.
Yeah, and then she gets to a train tunnel where you meet...
A giant
barfer.
This is huge. This is the first time they did the liquor as well. I mean, we're at movie five. And so they actually did a good job. But this thing is like five rhinos wearing that Voltron together.
I mean, that car chase was really, wait, doesn't, when the liquor chases the Rolls Royce, does the liquor come to her? Are you talking about that scene?
I'm talking about all the liquor scenes.
It's just, okay.
Yeah, it's huge. And it has a fork, has two tongues now too.
Yeah, the liquors look gangster in this. I mean, I'm telling you, it's Paul W. Sanders going, look guys, I got a budget. Look how great this looks.
It's like, remember how you guys were like making fun of how stupid the CGI liquor looked and how dumb its movement was? Well, here you go.
And then they're like, well, this is the fourth time. I'm tired of it. And he's like,
I mean, this liquor was like in Jurassic Park where the T-Rex is chasing the Jeep and it headbutts, sideswipes the Jeep with its head.
Yeah,
like, that's what this liquor is doing.
It knocks out some of the baklava zombies. Right. And I actually love – so I guess – yeah. So Alice saves Blondie, Kevin Durand, and Luther. And then there's a pretty cool car chase. Actually, I really like the car chase in this movie because I love that there's a zombie, a baklava zombie on fire with a rocket launcher. And there's some very cool visuals in this. And they actually wreck three Rolls Royces for this movie, which is sad. But I know, I thought it was a really creative chase. And then they slide down an escalator thing. They smush the liquors are so good in this movie. I don't want to call it a barfer.
Now it's just, I don't know how to call it liquor either. I thought that was a dumb name.
Yeah.
I don't know what to call it. But it's more like a giant brain headed version of the demon bug from Ghostbusters.
Ooh, there it is. Demon bug.
Demon bug. Hell brain hound.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Hell brain hound or barfer.
Barfer.
I would think if that thing could barf.
But Alice has really been doing pretty well in this movie, considering that she still doesn't have powers, too.
You know what I liked about that car chase scene is all the dudes in the car, they couldn't hit anything. And then Alice is like, I got it. And she like takes a Rolls Royce in reverse, kicks a door out, and kills a motorcycle henchman, baklava zombie. I thought that was really cool, that she was just like, all right, guys. And she just crushes the baklava. I thought that was pretty great. I love baklava zombies. All right, so...
And then she's going to make her way to the clone factory.
The clone factory.
That's exactly what it is.
Yep.
It's a clone factory.
And like, there's just a lot of clones.
Like, it's like when you see the giant, like, dry cleaner place where the shirts are rotating. It's like that, but with Alice's hanging there.
Yeah, and then there's the kids. I mean... I would just wake them all up again, right?
I mean, she did well with the Jova clones before.
Yeah, just wake them up. But, I mean, I guess they all would drown eventually. Oh, wait, we did skip a pretty great line. I like when Michelle Rodriguez meets up with Mila later on, and Rodriguez is like, what's with the S&M get up? When
right.
She's, when she's anti-gun, Michelle right. Rodriguez. All right, so
when she's Prius Rodriguez.
Yeah, Prius Rodriguez. Vroom, vroom. No, it'd be like, vroom. I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Takes 2 minutes to do that quarter mile.
Wait, I gotta charge my car here. But no, I wrote, when they said 50 basic models, all clones, I have holy shit in exclamation points. There's so many clones. There's a lot of them.
Well, this is where, like, I started going conspiracy theory. Like, what if the Alice we've been watching this whole time was just a clone?
Yeah. I mean, what was so special about the Alice in the first one that they would want to clone her to make her number one? And why are they cloning people? Oh, because they built that thing to test weapons on.
For all their simulations, I guess, yeah.
Well, I mean, they ripped off Westworld, but maybe the new Westworld's ripping off Resident Evil Retribution.
I mean, it could be. It's kind of like the movie Dark Skies ripped off the original Poltergeist, and then the new Poltergeist remake actually ripped off Dark Skies more than it ripped off.
Oh, wait, no, it's like Bourne Identity kind of – he wanted to make his own Bourne movie, so he ripped off elements of – I know it's based on a book, but he ripped off elements of Bond, and then the Bourne movie – and then the Bond movies were like, we're going to go more Bourne. Quantum of Solace? That's a weird one. All right, so – man, I totally lost myself on that. But yeah, so we got everyone back. We have a lot of clones. Michelle Rodriguez.
We're gonna end up in like a high speed ice chase that's like pre Fate of the Furious.
Yeah, submarine wipes out cars.
Like Michelle Rodriguez is in two movies that involve submarines and high speed chases and fight scenes on the ice.
Oh my gosh. And she's in that. Is that, can we tie Avatar into that at all?
That's a far reach. I got a lot of Guillermo del Toro parallels, but
I need to draw some Michelle Rodriguez ones. All right, so you have the gang, you have Kevin Durant. So eventually it gets to the point where they're like Ada. Well, no, wait. They're like Michelle. Wait, no. They're like Mila and the daughter have to escape. And then it ends up with Blondie, Luther, and Kevin Durant in a gunfight with Oded Fehr, Colin Salmon, and Jill Valentine, and a bunch of redcoats. And then Kevin Durant gets killed, but he kills Colin Salmon. And then the bomb goes off, and everyone has to get out of the place, right?
Right.
Did I miss anything?
Not really, but I felt like everything was pretty wishy-washy until we got to the Arctic.
Yeah. Oh, then it's Luther, Blondie, daughter, and Alice, and they get wiped out by a submarine, and out step Jill Valentine and Michelle Rodriguez. Michelle Rodriguez injects herself with...
The Las Plagas parasite, which looks like the thing that they put in Keanu Reeves' belly button in The Matrix.
Yeah, she injects herself. And now, I'm going to tell you something, John. I could fall asleep during this fight scene. I felt like it was really... It really meant nothing. I didn't really feel any stakes. But
there were a few moments that I liked that were mostly between Alice and Jill Valentine.
Oh, yeah, they held some shots though. There were some cool, they worked their butts off for the choreography. And I love that a movie ended with Michelle Rodriguez beating up two dudes, killing one of them. And then, like, it's just a fight scene between badass women, which you never see in cinema. It's just the whole stakes of it felt kind of pointless to me. But I should give you props for showcasing something you never – like, they spent 2 minutes in Avengers Thanos snaps his fingers to that fight scene with the three women. This one's an entire 10-minute – probably – how many moves? They probably learned 200 moves each.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I mean – and no, I guess I like it more now. You just know that there's just not much stakes because there's
but the thing is, I feel like it's every minute there's 1.5 really cool seconds. But the other 58.5 seconds are boring. And then you get 1.5 really cool seconds. And it's like that. It really is like, oh, this is boring. This is, oh, cool. Okay. Any more? Wait. Okay. It's just random. And you're almost getting bored again. You're about to just like go get a soda from the refrigerator without even pausing the movie. Oh shit. Look, you know, then something cool happens again. It's weird pacing this fight. Scene.
The shot though where Michelle Rodriguez shot some bullets and then the cases, the rounds or the cases
come out
fall
of her
into
fingertips.
The snow. But then they come into and they drop out into the snow and they're hot and they like melt through the snow. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was a clever scene.
You're not gonna kill me. And then I thought those two guys were gonna kill her. I thought it was stupid that they killed Luther and let Blondie live. Because Luther actually has chemistry
history
with Alice. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, why is Blondie still here? Even though he has the weirdest scene in Resident Evil history when he, at the end, when they're flying away in a helicopter, he puts his hand on Ada Wong's leg. And she's like,
she's like, nope.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? This dude's a creeper. But, Luther shouldn't, but I love that Michelle Rodriguez beat the living snot out of both of them. That was pretty cool. And then I like that the cleavage spider got ripped off of Jill Valentine. I liked when she elbowed Alice on the head, just delivered the elbow of doom.
She Tony Jaa-ong boxed her
yeah.
I in mean, the head.
I mean, they really went for it with the just watching the choreography. I mean, and they did, I know from the, they said they did like 92% of it. So, I mean, they had to spend some very long days just learning choreography. So I embrace that. That's cool. What'd you think about Michelle Rodriguez's death scene with the zombies?
I thought that was a great end to that, like, oddly punctuated fight scene, when she went down to the Los Plagas horde under the ice. I really like that. Like, she can regenerate and all, but she's going to be regenerating after they eat her.
I mean, that was like, that was cool. I didn't see that coming. And, you know, one of those zombies was Jeremy Bolt, one of the producers, and they had to be underwater for a day, and he got kicked.
That guy's always a zombie, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been in a ton of zombies. They keep throwing him in because they said something happened and a zombie couldn't do it. And since it was such like a crazy water scene, the producer was like, I'll do it, whatever. So, you know, Michelle Rodriguez beat the snot out of him for 2 days underwater. But I thought that was cool. She came up. She's like, I'm going to kill you. Then the zombies just... He looked at a lot of paintings. I forget. Anderson said he saw some paintings and he wanted to make it after that. But I kind of love that these, you know, baklava zombies swam probably 4 miles in the course of 15 minutes, right? And then found
the exact hole. I think they were just being pulled in a current.
Oh, okay. Oh, so they hit a jet stream. Interesting. So they hit a jet stream and then they just found her. But that was such a cool visual with all of them reaching up to wipe out Rodriguez. That was a cool
one. Oh, yeah. That was definitely like some Revelations stuff.
Yeah. And that's what I like about Anderson. He gets shots in his brain and he achieves them. Sometimes it gets weird with the story, but I love how that he executes some really cool shots in this movie. And I do think it's the best looking one by far.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't like Luther dying. And I wrote in my notes before I even knew what we were going to write about, I was like, why kill Luther? Why not have blonde random dude die?
Like an hour ago.
I put, like, you know, my notes, hopefully I'm not sounding too bad. I was like, the women win, which is cool. I like that Rodriguez won. I like this. I was like, the zombie swimming shot is badass. this is my note. I was like, it isn't all herky-jerky, but it seems pointless.
Herky-jerky?
Well, like the Bourne movies. Because they really let 3-4 punches happen at a time. So, I mean, and then Wesker... They get picked up.
So then they get helicoptered to the White House, which is apparently, well, I won't jump to it. They land at the White House where they're under fire. That's all we know. And Wesker is like walking her to the Oval Office where he takes a seat. And he's like, I'm going to give you all the exposition of what's going on in the world. And I'm going to let you know what's going to happen in the sequel.
And then I'm going to load you up. I'm going to give you your power back.
Right, and he just injects her in the neck. He's like, we're going to need you at your best. No one's ever bonded with a T-virus like you.
I'm going to tell you something, John. They're surrounded.
Dude, that looked hopeless. So when they get on the roof and they pan out and you see what feel like hundreds of thousands of monsters, including flying Game of Thrones dragon-sized monsters.
And a bunch of barfers.
Like, how are those flying monsters being held at bay?
By helicopters that run into them accidentally.
I feel like in 18 minutes, everyone in that White House is dead.
Yeah, because they would have to go into the bunker and where the big things couldn't fit.
Remember in World War Z, before they got, I don't remember what city they were in, some holy city. But in World War Z, the city where they would never get past the walls, yeah. Right? And then but eventually, like, they did have to leave because they were kept piling up over each other until they were as high as the walls and climbing on each other and getting in. And then Brad Pitt just gets out in the helicopter. Like, I feel like that's what we're watching. Wesker's like, they'll never penetrate these walls. And then 6 minutes pass.
Wait, they're inside already?
They're just climbing on each other. Like, that looked hopeless.
Yeah, I mean, they're done.
Hopeless. Like, that's how you end the movie that doesn't have a sequel.
And I'm glad I remember nothing about Resident Evil, the last chapter, because I'm excited.
By the way, am I to assume that he has appointed himself President Wesker?
Yep, he's President Wesker now.
Like, because he even says, here in this building is all that's left of humanity. What are we fighting for? Like, that seems pretty hopeless at that point.
But why do they want to wipe out humanity?
I think it's just viruses by nature want to spread, or zombies are just hungry for non-zombies, one or the other.
Yeah. I feel like they could work together. Well, the Red Queen has control now. So she's just like, you know, humans try to kill me, I'm going to kill them all.
In the last line of the movie, Wesker says, "Alice, you have work to do." In the sequel!
Like, remember in Rush Hour 2, the bloopers, when he's like, he won't be back for Rush Hour 2. Like, I wish to. Rush Hour 3.
They had the best gag reel at the end of those movies.
Oh, yeah, they were great. But just, was he going to send her into battle against a million zombies? I mean, we saw Baklava Michelle Rodriguez get wiped out by underwater zombies.
Yeah.
So,
No, really, the scenario that they illustrate at the end of the movie, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was fun to see. But that was like, you needed to cut that down to about 1% of the bad guys.
Are we to assume that they defeated all them? I need to watch this movie. I need to watch Final Chapter.
We're just going into Sillyville.
I'm excited. I've been excited to watch each consecutive Resident Evil because I remember nothing about them.
I'm going to tell you. So you know how in this one, though, you're finally like really getting answers instead of like one little reveal. Like in this one, they finally gave some answers about the clones. We start to learn more about the clones, the simulations, how it happened. The next movie, it's similar. We get a lot of reveals.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
Get a lot of reveals.
I know Game of Thrones comes back. And you want to hear something interesting, John? I was trying to type in Mila Jovovich's name to write the article for the pod post. And Spellcheck trying to change Mila Jovovich to Mila Rostropovich.
What?
Yep, Mila Rostropovich. That's what they wanted.
Okay.
I thought you might want to know.
Sure. Mila, that's a person.
Yeah.
Then. Okay.
Rostropovich. Interesting. All right. So final thoughts about this movie?
Dude, a lot of fun, man. And so this is now my third time seeing it. First time in the theaters. Or I should say fourth time. First time in the theaters. Second time probably 2 years later when I bought it. Third time was a year ago when I finally watched them in close proximity. And then this time. And I like it. I've said this about every one of these movies, haven't I? But I like it more every single time.
I guess we'll save our final rankings for the end of the next podcast. What do you think?
I mean, yeah.
It'll change from this one to the next one. But this is my favorite.
I got to tell you, I have trouble, though, because this is my favorite for some reasons, but not for all reasons. I don't know how to put it. Like, 3, 4, and 5. Like, I really enjoy 3, 4, and 5.
I'm going 5, 4, 1, 3, 2.
Wow, three way back there, huh?
I mean, 1 just kind of sets it off, builds the world. And I think, like I said, I think 3 is the worst written of all of them. Just the whole cigarette scene.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, where are the cigarettes at? Oh, no.
Well, and even the execution of the birds. I like the birds, but the way that scene with the birds killing people plays out, I thought was very haphazard.
And then the cargo zombies.
Ugh.
The onesie zombies.
Yeah.
We should rank the different kinds of zombies. We have the baklava zombies. We have the onesie zombies. We have the slow zombies.
Zombies can consistently get tougher, too.
Yeah, then we get the digging zombies.
The digging zombies.
Shovels.
Now, and they started running, too.
Yeah, now they're running. Jeez Louise.
And then in this movie, they're using machine guns. Rocket launchers and
while
stuff.
On fire.
Ball on fire. Well, I mean, it's a zombie, I guess. That's the luxury of being a zombie. So, wait, hold on now. So, those are Las Plagas zombies, right? Okay. So, Michelle Rodriguez injects herself and becomes a Las Plagas zombie. Or whatever. She's infected with Las Plagas. She's the same thing, just freshly infected. So, but she could be hurt. She just regenerated, right?
When?
Like if she was on fire, I don't think that she would ignore that she was on fire because she would be worried about burning up and not having anything left to regenerate, right? I mean, am I overthinking this?
Wait, what?
So if you said like one of them was, you know, on fire.
Yeah.
But they're not idiots. They can still think.
Yeah.
And if it was on fire, it wouldn't regenerate anymore. And were those zombies weren't regenerating, but Michelle Rodriguez was. She seemed to be a very different Las Plagas thing than the zombie army.
She was 2.0 Las Plagas.
She seemed to be different.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
I just don't know why.
Well, wait, so those Las Plagas, they weren't the Maginis, the ones with the tongues from the diggers?
No. And these were specifically called, these Las Plagas zombies are what Michelle Rodriguez infected herself with.
Got it.
Well, just based on what I have on the screen, right? But she, totally different from them. She cares about self-preservation. They basically moved along like not quite brain-dead zombies that knew how to use guns, but they just sat there and got shot up. And then they were destroyed when you shot them enough times. Michelle Rodriguez, you shoot her, she just is like, hey, you can't kill me. And then the bullets come out of her fingertips.
I don't know who you are, lady.
I love that. That's a good line.
2.0 Las Plagas.
I guess so. Did she bond with the Las Plagas virus in a special way, like Alice bonded with the T virus?
Wait, can pizza?
Is that what we're seeing?
Can pizza clones bond with Las Plagas?
I don't know.
Were the zombies clones?
Scary thought.
Are they cloning zombies?
It's like, and that's why they were so flawed.
Yeah. Ooh, that's it. She injected pure zombie, pure Las Plagas. They got watered down Las Plagas.
That could be.
There it is. You know, I swore I saw the billfold of one of their zombies, and I saw some crust sticking out. The Russian ones. You got any plugs before we get out of here?
We got to give a big shout out to The Last Knock and Crash Palace, where Johnny Numb hails. The Last Knock podcast, you can find them at crashpalace.com, and you can find them through Twitter at Crash Palace, and Johnny Numb is at Johnny Numb with no H in that Johnny, and he writes for Loud Green Bird, so shout out to them, loudgreenbird.com, and by the same name on Twitter, all great folks. But Johnny, thank you for your questions. We love your questions.
Yeah,
how about you, Mark?
No, just thank you for everyone to went on Ranker and put us number one on the Ranker's best movie podcast list. Thank you all for going on there. It's pretty awesome that happened. Also, if you have some free time, make sure to go to Movies, Films, and Flicks on iTunes, FLIX. Rate, review, and subscribe. Also, head to the website, moviesfilmsandflicks.com, FLIX. I'm sorry, Movies, Films, and Flicks, FLIX.com. Check out our stuff. Check out our old podcast. There's a podcast link. Check out John's horror reviews. There's a link for all of his horror reviews on the page. And also look at all my data that I do. So how far did the creature from It Follows walks? Check it out. But no, thank you so much for listening. We know we appreciate you giving your valuable time to us. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for John, loves his umbrella coffee, Levin Good. This is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week. Bye.